Energy Bits are tiny nutrition tablets made purely of algae, a sustainable whole food crop that supports your body and immune system. Some of the benefits include better physical performance, reducing heavy metals and toxins, improving memory, supporting the immune system, recovering from physical exercise, and so much more. I add a handful of these tablets into my smoothies every single day. You guys have seen it on my Instagram stories. It's easy to do, requires little effort on my end, and makes a huge difference in my well-being. Right now, Energy Bits is giving all Balance Your Life podcast listeners 20% off when you use code MEGHAN, M-E-G-H-A-N, at checkout on any of their products online. Use the link in the show notes to get your bag of algae tablets today. That's MEGHAN, M-E-G-H-A-N, at checkout for 20% off of your bag. Welcome to Balance Your Life podcast. My name is Megan Farrell, and I am the host of this show. This podcast is designed to inspire and empower you to start and maintain your own wellness journey so you can become the best version of yourself. Let's begin.
Hello, beautiful souls. Welcome back to another episode of Balance Your Life podcast. I am your host, Megan Farrell Gordon. If you are a longtime listener, thank you so much once again for showing up, for pressing play, and for supporting me in this show. If you are new to the show, thanks so much for diving in. Before we dive into this week's podcast episode, I just wanted to take a moment and ask that if you have been listening to this show for a while, and if you haven't already done so, please make sure that you give it a 5-star rating and review. Let me know what you are loving on the podcast. Let me know the topics that you have loved that I've covered, ones that you would like me to cover more of. Let me know any guests that you would like to hear from. If you are brand new and after this feel like I deserve a 5-star rating and review, I would love if you could take a moment to do so. It helps me to keep the lights on in my house. It helps me support my little growing family, and it allows me to keep putting out this free content for you, which I love so very much. And I am just so beyond grateful for my community and for all the love and support you guys show me on all the platforms and all the things that I do. So with that, this week on the podcast, I am joined by Dr. Melissa McCrary. Melissa is a psychologist, author, host of the Too Much on Her Plate podcast, and founder of the Your Missing Piece program, where she helps smart, high-performing women end cycles of overeating and emotional eating without diets, willpower, or deprivation. Over 39,000 women worldwide have taken her free Hidden Hungers quiz online, and her approach has been featured in numerous publications, including The Wall Street Journal, Fitness, CNN Health, Real Simple, and Self. On this episode, we talk about how we can use psychology, the brain, and mindset to create changes with overeating, and why diets have mentally warped our perspective on food. We also discuss how our body image perceptions are tied to good and bad food, how our sense of self-worth and our lifestyles relate to emotional eating, and so much more. You guys are going to love this podcast episode. Make sure you check out Melissa afterwards online. Check out that free quiz that she has. And with that, please welcome Dr. Melissa McCrary to the Balance Your Life podcast. Welcome to the show. I am very disciplined in my physical exercise and fitness routine. Not only do I love the way I look and feel in my body, but it has been so critical in my mental health. I just feel so good after doing a yoga or workout session, almost like a high. It truly is the best feeling. I'm not someone who loves going to the gym though. I find it takes away from my time, and although I do like going to a studio for workshops or retreats, doing yoga classes there wasn't feasible. You have to work on their schedule. It takes time to go there, set up, do the flow, and then drive back home. I love being able to work out or do yoga from my house. I just unroll my mat. My son plays next to me, so he gets to see me taking care of myself, and I feel like that's such an important thing for him to witness firsthand. I started my yoga journey on YouTube from the comfort of my home, and while I am so grateful for it giving me a start, I felt like I was missing something. I had to go to different channels depending on what sort of exercise I wanted. Some teachers were too slow, some made it boring, and I just wanted someone with some humor and fun, but who also taught a good flow. So I got certified as a teacher and started my own channel. This is a one-stop shop, and on my YouTube page, you'll find yoga flows ranging in all styles and lengths. You'll also find Pilates and yoga workouts, prenatal classes, my podcast episodes, wellness vlogs, and more. Click the link in the show notes to subscribe to my channel and support me and free online yoga and fitness.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Melissa McCreary. I'm so excited to have you on.
I am so excited to have this conversation with you.
I would love if you could give a little bio of who you are and where in the world you are currently joining me from today.
Perfect. I'm joining you from Bellingham, Washington. So if you are in the United States and you drive west until you can't, west until you can't go any farther and north until you can't go any farther, that's pretty much where I am. I'm a clinical psychologist. I have been helping women with food and weight and eating and overeating and emotional eating for my entire career, every single combination of that you can probably imagine. And I am passionate about helping women untangle what really can become a big mess of overwhelm, overload, and overeating. So I do that through my coaching practice. I have a podcast, and I'm just, you know, playing around with stuff and our ability to connect with people all over the world and having a lot of fun.
I love that so much. And I want to even back right up to the start, because what you're doing is so amazing. But have you always been interested in, like, when you were little, did you want to grow up and be a psychologist? Like, what led you on this path to being not only a psychologist, but then leading more into like the food diet side of things?
That's such a great question. Yes, I have always, well, as long as I knew there was this thing called psychology, I have been fascinated with it. And I always wanted to be a psychologist. My family used to say, well, you should experiment, you should try different things. And I always knew I wanted to. And I think what really fascinated me was the idea of possibility, that the more that we can understand why we are the way that we are, and that can lead us into creating new possibilities and being more of what we want to be. And I hadn't really thought about it that way, but that really is the thread that has, you know, connected things in my career. And what was the second part of your question? The piece about food and
yeah, what led you into wanting to work on, specifically in that field? Yeah.
Well, there were a number of different circumstances that kind of got me working there. I wasn't really sure that was what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to work with women. And then what happened is it was kind of strange, because I was now in a position, my first job was working with women around food and eating disorders and overeating. And so even the clients who came to me that weren't interested, that weren't there for that particular reason, would see that in my bio. And so they would talk to me about their relationship with food. And what fascinated me and really bothered me deeply was I was talking with women who were amazing. I was talking to people who had achieved incredible things in all areas of their life, you know, their career. They were super moms, they were stretching and reaching and doing amazing things, athletes and fitness professionals and physicians and business owners and attorneys. And yet there was this one area of their life, which is their relationship with food, where what I saw was they were settling. And they were also being told by the professionals in their life that what was possible for them was settling, that your relationship with food is something you will always struggle with, or your weight is something you will always struggle with, or it's something you have to manage. You have to stay on top of. You have to spend your valuable willpower controlling it. And I had this, I was hearing it from professionals, my colleagues, and I was seeing it in these clients who didn't settle in the rest of their lives. They had no interest in settling in the rest of their lives. And then I realized that that was not my story. I didn't think about having issues with food or problems with food or weight or eating because I had had them, but I had settled that stuff. I had made peace. I had created the kind of freedom that I now teach my clients to make, and I had moved on. And I didn't realize that was an unusual thing. And so I became very passionate about helping women expand their view of what's possible for them and showing them how you don't have to be strong with food for the rest of your life. You can create a relationship with food that you love, that supports you, that gets you to your goals, and then you can move on.
Why do you feel that the idea of food or diet is so, it's such a triggering topic of conversation in our world today? And I truly feel like, I mean, it seems like everybody has either like a body image issue or a dietary issue, or it just food is just such a hard thing for them to wrap their minds around. They overeat, they don't eat enough, they count too many calories, they're obsessive about it. And I'm just curious, why do you think this is such a pandemic in itself in today's society?
It's such an interesting way of talking about it. I think we are obsessed with food. And I think that is part of the problem. Why? The more we obsess with food, I think the more we stay, the more we stay stuck in vicious cycles with food, the more we, just like the same way we obsess about the scale, you end up being obsessed in this cycle where every day is defined by this number that you see when you step on the scale, right? And there is an industry, multiple industries actually, where there is a lot of money to be made keeping people on a hamster wheel where they're constantly thinking about and trying to perfect this thing that you can't get perfect if all you're doing is focusing on the food. And that's actually what I teach my the women that I work with in my program, is that it doesn't start with the food. Our brain tells us, you want to change your weight or you want to change your eating. So you should start thinking about, okay, what should I eat and how should I eat and when should I eat and what should I not eat and what do I need to throw out of my kitchen? But really, it doesn't start with the food. And as long as we stay focused on the food, we stay focused on the food. What we really need to do is go deeper and look at the reasons, especially for smart, busy women, the reasons that food has the power that it does in your life. The reasons that you're having the cravings and the urges to overeat.
And just, I can appreciate it would be different for so many different types of people in the world, but what have you noticed to be a top, maybe 3, 5 even reasons, or even if there's one reason that people are so obsessive? Because as you were talking, I don't know, I had this download that for me, and maybe it's just because of where I'm at in my life and my age and stuff, but so much of it seems to be around more like a body image issue. It's like we're supposed to be thinner or in shape. And it's not even so much food kind of gets thrown into two categories. It's good or it's bad. And we don't really look at more behind it. It's just if we're, a little heavier, sometimes it's you're lazy, you just don't eat well, you eat badly, you eat inconsistently. And I'm trying to articulate what I'm trying to say. To me, that seems to be, at least in my experience of seeing people, it seems to be more of a body image issue. And we've just tied it to food and how that either makes us worthy or unworthy. Is there any sort of is that one of the reasons? Is there more to it? Are there multiple reasons that you see people struggling with this?
Absolutely. And that whole issue of worthiness is so important. And it's such a showstopper. I think that's one of the reasons that high achievers settle in this area, because it feels like, well, okay, you know, I can't do this. And that means I'm not a good person. And so I either need to like numb myself and not be thinking about this, or I need to be stuck on this treadmill where I'm always trying harder and harder with these things that don't work for me. But really, if we're going to talk about overeating and emotional eating specifically, and I work primarily with women, we really need to talk about the reasons that food has the power that it does. And I call these hidden hungers. So we live in a society where we are taught to use food for all sorts of things, right? We are taught that food is a convenient way to comfort ourselves and reward ourselves and numb ourselves and deal with stress and deal with exhaustion. And it is easy. It is accessible. You can do it while you're doing a million other things. I think for women, it is this thing that you can use as a coping strategy without inconveniencing other people. You don't have to say no to other people. You can plow through, you know, taking care of them while you're going through the drive-through or while you're nibbling on cookies or something like that. But if you look at the reasons that so many of us reach for something to eat, right? Being tired, being too busy, being stressed out, having tough emotions that you either don't know how to deal with, or maybe you don't want to deal with them, or because you are tired and stressed and too busy, you don't feel like you have the bandwidth to deal with them. Eating because you just want to avoid things because it's all too much. You have too much on your to-do list, right? Or you have too much emotionally that you feel responsible for. There are powerful reasons that we end up in the kitchen staring at the cupboard thinking, why am I here? I'm not even hungry. I'm going to have some cashews anyway. I'm going to cut off another piece of those leftovers. And they cycle and they build on each other, right? Stress and exhaustion and being too busy and strong emotions and feeling like it's all too much. And I think the real key piece here is that if we don't deal with this snowball that is happening in the background, then you can do all the food planning that you want. You can learn all about all the different approaches to nutrition. You can worry about carbs or gluten or whatever it is, or intermittent fasting. But if you're not paying attention to these things that are like making food so powerful in your life, it is always going to feel like a battle of self-control. And then you couple that, and I know this is a very long answer, but you couple that with the diet industry that tells you, like you were saying, you just need to be stronger. You're just lazy. You don't have enough willpower, totally disregarding all these hidden hungers. And it is this recipe for stealing women's confidence, right? And leaving you feeling like the only answer is to just keep going back in there every Monday, starting over and working harder and feeling a little less hopeful and probably mad at yourself.
What are some of these hidden hungers that maybe you work with your clients about? Because I know at one point you said it's not even so much about the food. It's like everything. It's like this, what's going on in the background that's leading us to this. So maybe before we get into that, maybe we can talk a little bit about what these hidden hungers are and how we can identify what they are and maybe what sort of, I guess, our triggers are for leaning in towards those hidden hungers.
Yes. So, and also a huge trigger for overeating is overwhelm. You know, that's when I talked about avoidance, right? Like, I just don't want to deal with this. And so one of the things that happens when I start to talk about hidden hungers is that it is really easy for our brains to start to get overwhelmed. It is really easy to start this conversation and to start thinking, oh my gosh, I have all of them. I'm completely screwed. What am I going to do? Like, this is not going to work for me. So first of all, I think we need to be really careful about overwhelm. This is not a topic. You don't have to change everything to create freedom from overeating. And so one of the things I've done is created a quiz that you can take. It's totally free. It's on my website if people are interested, where you can identify not just, oh, I have all the hidden hungers, but this is my primary hidden hunger. This is the place that is going to give me the most bang for my buck if I want to start here. And here is a concrete step that I can take to start to address that hidden hunger. The hidden hungers that I see coming up all the time for women are a hunger for stress relief, right? A hunger for self-care and me time. One that people don't pay a lot of attention to, or they kind of roll their eyes about, is a hunger for compassion. If you're doing a lot of mindless eating, a lot of eating to numb out, a lot of eating to just make the world stop, it is probably being fueled by a hidden hunger for compassion, which is, you know, kindness to yourself and empathy for yourself. And sometimes hunger for compassion starts with just an acknowledgement that you're having a really hard day, or that you're trying to do a lot of hard things, or you're feeling lost or anxious or whatever it is. Another hidden hunger, which fuels a lot of emotional eating, is a hunger for emotional effectiveness. So it's one thing to say, yes, I'm an emotional eater. I eat when I'm anxious, or I eat when I'm angry, or I eat whatever, you know, whatever, or I eat all the time when I have emotions. But really, okay, so what does that mean? Sometimes it means I have a hunger for self-compassion, but sometimes it means we really are hungry for more, to feel more capable with emotions, right? There are a lot of women who struggle with difficult conversations, angry conversations, conflict, anxiety. And so sometimes that hidden hunger is wanting more tools or strategies or a feeling of confidence when it comes to strong emotions. And then the biggest one, the one that I think most women completely will say, oh yeah, I have that. And then they completely skip it. And it may be the most powerful one, is a hidden hunger for rest, right? There is so much eating that happens because we are exhausted.
I feel kind of naive for even asking this, but I guess for me, I've never really struggled with like an emotional eating type of capability. Like, I don't know if it was just the fact that I grew up in a household that I don't think we ever had a scale or anything. Like, it wasn't really part of I feel super blessed because I know this is something that people really struggle with. So I feel like just even kind of silly for asking this, but I guess if anyone's kind of like in my position, or just maybe trying to understand maybe a partner of theirs or a friend of theirs that is an emotional eater, is maybe part of the problem is the fact that they're overeating, but is it like they're overeating healthy foods, or does it always tend to be like processed and sugary foods? And that's also contributing to overeating because there's not a lot of like nutritional value in these. So you just tend to eat more and more because you're trying to get full, but you can't get full on a chocolate bar. Does that kind of make sense? Like, is there any correlation between that?
I think it depends. I think it's actually a pretty common question. People will ask all the time, can you be an emotional eater and not be overweight? Absolutely. Can you be an emotional eater and eat really healthy food? Absolutely. Can you be an emotional eater and you're eating just a bunch of junk, and what you know, would really help a lot to clean, you know, in terms of how you feel, to clean up your diet? Absolutely. I think one of the big shifts that needs to happen is that the diet industry and diet mentality has done a really good job of disconnecting us from our relationship with food, right? So diet culture tells us how we're supposed to eat, what we're supposed to weigh, what we're supposed to look like, and we're supposed to take it in and then figure out how to achieve this thing that comes at us from the outside. If you want to have a relationship with food that really works for you, no matter what your eating is right now, that really has to come from the inside out. It really has to come from being connected to you and what you know about yourself and being able to figure out what works for you. And so for me, I think many of us, most of us at times eat emotionally. We eat because we're happy, or we eat for a reward, or we eat just because just, you know, we don't even want to think about why we're eating, but it doesn't have anything to do with hunger. So for me, the real place to look at is whether your relationship with food is working for you, whether your eating is working for you. And what I hear from a lot of women is, I do hear from a lot of women that I would like to lose weight, but I think almost even more, I hear from women who say, I am so tired of what my relationship, how much space my relationship with food is taking in my brain. I am so tired of thinking about this stuff. I am so tired of trying to get it perfect. I am so tired of waking up every morning and trying to think, oh yeah, is this a good day or is this a bad day? Or am I mad at myself? Or is this a starting over day? Or like, I'm so tired of this and even resentful, right? Like I've got better things to do in my life. And why am I stuck in this place of thinking about food and weight? And this happens even for people who've achieved their goal, right? They have this magical goal on the scale. And then it becomes, how long can I do this, right? How long can I keep this up? And that is not a peaceful relationship with food. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, no, I answered it perfectly. I guess for me, because I'm like, it's always been something that I've been so fascinated by. And you never want to come across as like, judgmental just sounds like a terrible word, but you want to understand where the other person is coming from. And I've seen it on two ways. I know people who are emotional eaters that are very healthy, like they eat incredibly well. And you're like, I don't understand what's going on here. And then on the other side, I think maybe the more obvious for people is like, you see people who are like emotional eaters and they don't eat well. And you can kind of make that, well, they're more of an emotional eater. Cause I guess in my head, I correlate unhealthy eating with like being a little bit more of an emotional eater. Like they just go for the bag of chips, or maybe that's just who I've had the experience of being in my life. But I have also seen on the flip side, like the person who eats a bunch of salad or, you know, lots of veggies and fruits. But I can absolutely see that they would be an emotional eater and that stress would be a trigger for them, or they're just having a bad day. So that's where they tend to go to. But maybe it's just like that side seems like it's tied up in a prettier bow than the other side. And I don't know, maybe that's just the experience that I've had. So I guess if someone's coming to you or they're part of your coaching program or they're just working with you, instead of focusing like right on the food, because I think a lot of people will go, okay, like, let's just look at your food intake and we'll cut this down or we'll swap that out. And what are you starting with when someone comes to you? Are you looking at past traumas in their life, what they're currently going through, just to see and pinpoint where maybe that you were naming some of those hidden hungers, like maybe they're not even aware that they have a hidden hunger that is tied to like, maybe they're like, I didn't realize even that I was so fatigued and tired and stressed. But now that you've pointed that out to me, I feel like that's exactly what it is.
So there are four actually pillars of the approach that I use, and it drives people crazy because, as you pointed out, what we've been taught to believe is if I want to change the food, I need to start with the food, right? So give me a food plan. What is the food plan? How am I going to eat? And yet what happens if we don't look at the psychology behind it, if you don't look at your mindset and the way you are approaching food, then what you end up doing is you create the same old cycle over and over and over again, right? So depriving yourself, getting too hungry, then overeating in the evening, not getting what you really need, using food to fill in the gaps, feeling like you need to get it completely perfect and coming up with some crazy rigid plan that looks really good on paper, but that you could never possibly sustain, right? Or that doesn't fit your schedule. So the very first piece, the very first pillar is embracing your power, getting your power back, starting to realize the places where diet mentality has been stealing your power, you know, looking at all the shoulds and the rules that most of us have more advice in our heads about food and nutrition than we ever wanted, half of it conflicts with each other. And it's just like, you know, rolling around in there, kind of crazy making. So really doing a detox and a mental detox and looking at, okay, how can, and learning some practices, how can I start to sort through all of this crap and figure out what is useful for me? What do I want? And why do I want to change my eating? What is really going to empower me and motivate me? Because a number on the scale doesn't do it, right? And so really looking at how you can get your power back, how you can be the one driving this bus forward instead of following along, trying to be at the mercy of a diet or a food plan and waking up every day, wondering if you're going to have enough willpower or self-control and then beating yourself up when you don't, because that doesn't work. So embracing your power. The second phase that is really important is, and that's the place where people say, okay, that's really great, but what do I eat? How do I eat? Right? And so figuring out how you can start to make choices with food that are not based on diets and deprivation and blaming yourself. And how can you step out of diet mentality and make changes with food that are going to work for you to not only get to your goals, but that you want to follow for the rest of your life? You know, I would imagine that one of the reasons, Megan, that it's your relationship with food has that ease that it does is it's because it's your relationship with food. It's on your own terms. Like when you decide why to eat something, it's not because I have to, or I should, or like, I'm not allowed to eat this thing I really want. It's a choice, right? You're in charge of it. And a lot of people who've struggled, you know, and I talk to people who, my mother put me on my first diet when I was 11 years old, right? I've been on a diet ever since. A lot of people have lost that sense of autonomy and authority in their lives. So let's give you your power back. Let's figure out how to deal with food on your terms. You know, what do you want it to look like? What is the way of eating that's going to get you to your goals? The third phase is really taking charge of your time and your energy. And that's part of where we start to deal with, not start to, but continue to deal with these hidden hungers. How do you take your power back? How do you become the CEO of your well-being? And then I think the fourth piece of this that is really important that, again, diet mentality completely ignores is forever, right? What hasn't worked in the past for you? What about your mindset? You know, perfectionism, self-sabotage has gotten in your way. What are the expectations that you have taken on from other people that are not a forever plan? And how do we get rid of all that and create something that not only you can do forever, but is a way of eating you want to do forever, right? That you don't think about, that keeps you at your goal. It just boggles my mind how little that gets talked about.
It's one of my biggest sticking points when it comes to the health and wellness industry is even the concept of diets. It drives me insane. It's like, you got to be vegan or keto or vegetarian or paleo and I'm like, these are total blanket statements that you're giving an entire population that you're not taking into any sort of consideration. Like, you know, I even know people who are vegan and they're vegan because it seems like the right thing to do. And I'm like, do you enjoy it? If you like meat, even, I feel like there's so much trigger behind people consuming meat or like this, like you're a bad person if you like meat, and people like, no, like I love it. My body did well with it. But, you know, it just seems like it's the wrong thing to do. Like I should be vegan because of the animal and the environment. And I'm just like, we have to get out of this mentality of like, this is the, you should be doing this.
The shoulds.
Shoulds are brutal. And then you follow somebody who's doing something that works perfectly well for them. And that does, you know, veganism works for some people and it works really, really well, but they're a completely different person. They at least, you know, I'm always like, well, what's your background? What kind of, you know, ethnicity are you? Do you identify as a male or female? Are you tall? Are you short? Are you, what do you want? Like, you know, and it seems so simple, but it's also like, I want to have the meat or the even the veganism, but I feel like I shouldn't, or I don't know what I'm doing. Like, you just get so, it gets so confusing as well in the space of like all the things that you should be doing or you shouldn't be doing.
Well, and there's so much shaming that goes on along with that. I often say that the client who shows up in my programs is the really smart woman who knows what she wants. Like, she sees this goal and she has this idea of what she needs to do to get there. Usually a lot of shoulds, and she cannot connect the gap between the two. And the diet industry just shames us when we're in that position, instead of like, well, let's look at this gap and let's look at why it's not working. And there's gotta be something going on here because you are a smart, capable person who has accomplished lots of things. This is the one area of life where that just gets thrown out the window and we get totally shamed. I was just talking to somebody who works in the wellness industry. And I was talking to this person about my clients and overeating. And they said, you know, I just don't understand overeating. I mean, why people would do that? Why? I mean, if you want to binge, just go eat 5 pounds of broccoli. Just go do that. I don't. And the almost anger and shaming and judgment, as if anybody who has ever felt powerless in front of a bag of chips hasn't thought, I really don't want to eat these chips, or I shouldn't eat these chips, or, oh, it would be healthier to eat broccoli. Like, there are a lot of smart women who are stuck in this trap, and the judgment and the shaming just makes it worse and keeps people isolated. And it just enrages me and boggles my mind that it happens.
I would love if we could talk about how someone could use psychology, mindset, the brain to help change their overeating habits. Let's say even someone's like, hey, I know I'm an overeater, but you know, I don't have the funds to be going to a coach or to investing in a program or to see a nutritionalist. Like, if someone's like, I got to do this at home for the time being, I've got no money to invest into this, where can I even start?
You start with trying on the idea. I would love you to accept the belief, but trying on the idea that there is always a reason we eat. There is always a reason. There's always a reason that you eat. There's always a reason that you overeat. And it is not that you are lazy, that you didn't have enough willpower, that you are undisciplined, that you are unintelligent. There is a reason. And so we go so fast and we do. And especially when we have a problem that we want to solve, our brain's first response is, so what do I do? Right? Which is one of the reasons we want to jump into, okay, I need a food plan. I need a diet. No, let's start with taking a deep breath and trying on the idea that there's a reason, and starting to ask yourself, what do I know about why, what was going on? What was going on this evening that was different from yesterday when this didn't happen? What was I thinking? What was I feeling? What do I know about what I was needing? Starting there and being curious, and to go back to that hidden hunger for compassion, you know, really being compassionate with ourselves, because when you accept the traditional idea that you should have figured this out, you just need to eat less and move more and say no and be strong, then what happens is you have a bad night, or you have a binge, or you overeat, and there's only one answer. It's your fault. You should have been stronger. You blew it. Now you have to start over. In that model, there is no room for learning anything about what is going on. Once you have blamed yourself, it's a dead end. It's decided. You know why it happened. It's you. You're lazy. You don't have willpower, which is a lie, but it closes off all your ability to expand into something else. So it sounds like a silly little thing, and it is not. It is actually such an incredible weapon when you can stop and when you can take a breath and when you can get curious and like, okay, wow, I don't know what just happened here, but there's a reason that just happened. Why did it happen? Or why am I standing here in the kitchen in front of the cupboard? What do I know? Don't worry about what you don't know. Just, you know, what do I know? And let that be the first, like the beginning of a thread that you start to pull on.
There was once a person, I'm not sure if it was a coach of some kind or just like an expert in the field, but he said something along the lines of like, the worst thing you can ever say in life and business is I know, or you think you're the smartest person in the room, because then there's no room for you to be open to different possibilities or opportunities or ways of thinking. And I feel like that's so applicable to what you're saying, is like the fact that like, it sounds easier, I'm sure, said than done. But the idea of like, maybe it's not your fault. Let's look at what happened the other day, what happened in your life that is leading you to be an emotional eater. You know, it's, you can't blame yourself. Like, just like you can't, I feel like, think, well, I know it all. I know it all. There's no room for me to learn anything else new because I know it all.
Yeah. And another piece of the I know it all is, well, I know there's nothing that can be done about it, right? Yes, I hear this all the time. Yes, I'm a stress eater. Of course I'm a stress eater. Look at my life. And like, I can't change it. I can't change it. So what am I supposed to do? And you can just, I mean, if you just listen to that, and you can hear the corner that person is backed into. And so that our brain gets really uncomfortable when it doesn't know the answer to things. Our brains love certainty. So this idea of just being curious and like, okay, so what, right? I know that I'm stressed. Okay. I don't know what I can do about the stress. Okay. Maybe there's nothing you can do about the stress, but could you be kind? How would you treat your best friend who is having stress? Because that's usually not how we talk to ourselves, right? And going and getting something to eat is often a way of shutting ourselves up or shutting ourselves down, or just numbing ourselves so we can go back in and take some more unpleasantness from our life, and also from the way we're talking to ourselves while we're trying to get through our life. And so there is so much power in getting curious. And there are all sorts of tools that you can use to do that. But really, you know, the very most basic is stopping and taking a pause, which usually includes a breath, right? And asking yourself, what do I know about what I'm feeling? What do I know about what I'm needing? What do I know about what I want? Don't worry about what you don't know. And don't worry if you don't know anything, because if you don't know anything, if you don't have any answers, it's probably a sign that you haven't asked that question or been asked that question in a very long time, right? And there is a power in just starting to ask a question and put it out there. Your brain will start to ask it for you over time. You'll start to get answers.
If someone is right in this moment, or in the moment of staring at their cupboards or their fridge going, I need to eat. I'm starving. I need to eat. Are there like tangible tips that someone can replace that initial thought with? Like, you know, off the top of my head, I'm thinking, you know, there's a lot of like doctors and experts that are like, if you feel really hungry, try drinking some water. Sometimes your body is literally like dehydrated, and it's mistaking that dehydration cue for a hunger cue. Like, is there any sort of like replacement that you would give to your client or somebody who's maybe even telling you like, what do I do in the moment if I'm staring at my fridge going like, I gotta eat. Like, I know I just ate, but I'm sad. I'm hungry. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I want to eat right now.
Well, I think, yeah, there is a lot of advice out there. And there are a lot of people who, when they hear the advice, are rolling their eyes because they've been told it over and over and over again, like go eat 5 pounds of broccoli instead of the chocolate, right? I think the hard part of that is it depends. It depends. And that's why curiosity is so important. And that is why going inside instead of looking to somebody else's checklist is so important, because we end up at that kitchen cupboard for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes we really are hungry. Sometimes we are too hungry, and we're kind of past the point of being able to make an intelligent choice anymore. sometimes distraction works. There's an entire module in my program where I teach something called instead strategies, right? So what to do instead and how to, and a big piece of that is how do you identify what's going to work in the moment? And a big piece of that is making sure that the thing you try to the best of your ability matches what you're looking for. So if you're overeating at the end of the night, if you're exhausted and it just feels like you just need a little bit of something for you because it's been a very long day and there has been nothing for you all day long and this is your me time, right? Trying to match, okay, so is there something else that I could do that doesn't require a lot of energy? Because that's what people say. High achievers are always like, I should just clean the kitchen instead, right? I should. No, you're tired and you're exhausted and you want a reward. You are not standing around thinking, how could I be more productive? So thinking about, again, those questions, what do I know about what I'm feeling? What do I know about what I need? What do I know about what I want? And sometimes I think the most concrete thing you can do in that moment that works for most people is give yourself a little break. Don't go into reaction mode, you know, stop your hand from reaching into the cupboard. And if you pause for 3 minutes, what can you learn about what's going on in that moment?
Are you a fan of meal prepping? And the only reason I ask this is because I feel like for me, when I take the guesswork out of anything, you know, we were talking about there's so many decisions we have to make throughout the day. Like I work for myself now, so it's a little different, but I remember working in corporate, like my clothes would be laid out the night before. So there was no like getting up in the morning and making a decision. I had, which I'm sure probably sounds like so boring to people, but like, you know, throughout the week, like I would have a stir fry because for me, I was just like, it's easy, it's quick, I can whip it up. Like I would make a big batch and it would last me 2 days and then have another batch and then it would last me another 2 days. Like for me, the idea of like meal prepping or having some things kind of in the fridge or freezer that I can like be like, I don't feel like cooking today. It's one of those days. Okay. At least this is kind of put together and I'm not overthinking about like, oh my God, I got to make the chicken and do a dish and do all the things. Like I can appreciate some people are like, well, I don't know what I'm going to want, you know, 5 days in a row. And I'm not like that 5 day person, but I'm very much like a, if I can have a couple of things together, it takes kind of the guesswork out for me.
It makes it easy, right? I'm a huge believer in let's figure out the easiest way to do this for you, whoever you are, you know, whoever you are that I'm working with. Let us figure out your style, your strengths. Let's be realistic about your lifestyle. And yes, meal prepping. The other side of that is that I see a lot of women who put a ton of pressure on themselves to meal prep with time that they don't have. And so sometimes meal prepping is the absolute answer and sometimes it is the stress. And so, okay, is there a different approach we can try, right? And then I think what every woman needs is a plan B. So whatever the thing is that you think works most of the time, I am sure you have days or maybe even cycles in your life where that thing is not realistic or it doesn't work. And again, the old deprivation mindset is you are supposed to make everything work. You need to, whatever the plan is, if it's not working, the answer is you need to work harder. That is the myth that takes down so many women and keeps them overeating. And we interrupt that. That's what, part of what I do in my programs all the time is, wait a minute. No, it's not you that's broken. The idea is broken. It's not working for you. So how can we make it easier? And so meal prep is great. Sometimes it's the worst thing. And even when meal prep is great, what's your plan B? I love, you know, you're like, I always want something in my freezer. That's, you know, what's the thing in your freezer? What's the easy takeout that is healthy? What is the easiest possible way to feel successful? I think is a really great question to ask yourself.
I love thinking of it as like, what is the easiest way to be successful? Because yeah, I think it gives it a different kind of connotation of like if I consume this and whatever, it doesn't necessarily have to be food, just this idea of like, what can I do to, I always say like be the best version of myself or like be the most successful in the day. Because yeah, like, and you know, plan B too, because sometimes you have days that you're just like, today was not a day. And it's funny because I guess like I am in the health and wellness type of space. And I remember posting one time, it was like a Tuesday, my husband and I had just, we had all these appointments during the day and we went out for lunch afterwards. And I remember posting, it was either like a drink, it was a mocktail because people didn't know at the time I was pregnant, but I think they thought it was a cocktail. And I think I had like some bread and shrimp or something. And people were like, oh, is it like, is Tuesday your cheat day? And I'm like, I hate that term so much because I'm like, and I was, I'm very kind back to them, but I'm like, for me, those don't work. I do not like the idea of cheat days because there's also life. And I feel like for me, I eat pretty well most of the time. So if I have a day on a Tuesday that I'm like, I don't stress about it at all. I don't have a designated day that I consider like a cheat day. But also on the flip side, another funny part of this, we were just kind of talking about dualities. I look forward to my Friday and or Saturday night so much because those are the days that I indulge in like two cookies or like a piece of cake or a slice of cheesecake if we have it. And it drives my husband insane. He's like, you got to just like live your life. Like if you want it on a Thursday, like you should just have it. And I'm like, if I'm celebrating something, I will do that. I will not deprive myself of, you know, being out in a celebration. But I'm like, and I was explaining to him, I'm like, but I also look so forward to it throughout the entire week that it just like every day I'm like, oh my God, we're getting closer to Friday. Like it just makes me so have it. There's a little bit of like a discipline for it in it for me, but I'm also like, it gives me something to look forward to. As silly as that sounds, like I really enjoy, and it sounds so like trivial, like two extra cookies, but I'm like, man, I look forward to it so much. And it gives me something to look forward to.
What you just said there, I mean, what you just gave, I think is such a great example of why in your missing piece, which is my program, we start with embracing your power and taking your power back. Because the difference between what you just described, which is deciding, this is how I like to eat. And I like getting excited all week. And I like having this clearness about Saturday and Friday and Saturday or whatever it is. And I, you know, in other days I have these policies but you sound in charge of it. And I, you know, I'm sure it would feel different if somebody had said to you, Megan, here's the deal. This is how you have to eat Sunday through Thursday. And if you want to eat cheesecake, you have to wait until Saturday. And you can only eat it on Saturday, and then you have to record that you had your cheat day, and it doesn't feel the same. It's a complete, even though on paper it might look identical, and it gets, I mean, it just, your inner rebel starts going, right? And the pushback, and then nobody's going to make me, and I get to be the boss of me. And it is so important to come from that place that you are in with making choices. And there are just so many incredible women who do not feel like they get to make the choice anymore. Like they're so tangled up in shoulds and rules and doctor's recommendations and gurus and people on Instagram and the latest book that conflicts with the book that they read before. And it's exhausting.
No, what you said there too, like it just such an aha moment for me, because you're right. Like I do feel in control. I feel empowered. It's empowering to me.
Yeah.
And even on the, like, I'm thinking of it now, like I've never been a huge drinker, like maybe a couple of times. Christmas time, I'd have like a glass of champagne, you know, New Year's, sometimes throughout the year, like a handful of times. The fact that I'm pregnant and it's like, you can't have it, I'm like, I want it. I want that glass of champagne now. Like, and I don't indulge in it, but it's true. Like it's such a small little thing, but it's like, it's the fact that somebody has told me that I can't do it, that I'm like, but now I want one. Like, you know, like there's no like power, I guess, in it, even though I know I'm creating life and there's power in that and stuff. It's just, I can definitely think of it that way. Like the idea of like there being your, like it's your decision, it's your power. Or being told, well, like, this is what the latest diet says. This is what my coach says I have to do. I have to record. Like, honestly, it just sounds like a nightmare to do all of that stuff.
Yes. And to go back to your cheat day, I mean, because I am so on the same wavelength with you. As a client said to me, and I have used it ever since, she's like, Who would want a relationship with food that you had to cheat on? Like, who would want that? Like, that there's a problem right there. If it's set up so that you have to cheat on it, it's, she said, I would never have a marriage that I felt like I had to cheat.
Like one day a week, you get to just go all crazy and stuff.
I know. And I just need that. I need that cheat day, right?
I know.
There's something wrong with the relationship if what you need is a cheat day. And so I think it's all set up on deprivation and forcing yourself to do something that really isn't a fit. And it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
If someone is like, I have tried this for so long. I've been on this hamster wheel. I do the diets. I fall off. I do really well for a few weeks or a few months. I fall off. What you're saying sounds amazing. I feel like I just need that support system. I feel like I need that accountability. Can you talk a little bit about your program and what somebody could expect from going in it, especially if they felt like, hey, I have tried all the things and I just know that I need that accountability and that little bit of extra help or support to kind of get me on the right path?
I would love to. Yeah. So my program is called Your Missing Piece, P-E-A-C-E, but it's also really piece, like putting the pieces together in a way that solves your puzzle, right? So Your Missing Piece is a 6-month program, which means that we get to work together long enough to not be in a cycle of endlessly starting over, right? So it really combines, it's coaching. We do group coaching calls on Zoom 3 times a month. There is incredible training and our incredible resources in the program around all of these concepts that I've been talking about. And another piece of pulling in psychology to make changes is knowing that everybody learns in a different way, right? So we do the coaching with me. There are guided visualizations. There are workbooks. There are videos. There are different kinds of worksheets. There's a planner that really, because part of what I really want to help you do is rewire your mindset. Rewire yourself from all that, because every time you get hooked into that should and that self-blame and the, I'm not working hard enough, it just reinforces that cycle of misery, which usually leads to more overeating. So this is a program about doing it completely differently from a place of power to create long-term forever results. And I know that's a lot to, it's a lot to promise, but it's something I'm really passionate about. And I'm again, like I said at the very beginning, I'm so tired of women feeling and being taught that they need to settle, right? Let's solve this thing so you can use your amazingness for other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I love the idea that you've just said, you know, everybody learns differently and there's different ways that people consume information or resonate with different information. And, you know, one of the things we were saying is like seeing other people online, like I'll never forget being in the health and wellness space and people being like, you have to journal first thing in the morning for 30 minutes. And I was like, all right, like we're journaling first thing in the morning. I hated it so much. And after 2 weeks, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. This is absolutely ridiculous. Like, it was just like, you get so like, you're like, oh, like I have to do this thing in the morning. And then I stopped and it was like, oh, like, you know, I can just stop it. Like, I'm not going to be any less successful or less health and wellness based because I'm not doing it. I started doing like gratitude journaling in the evening and I'm like, it made a world of difference. Like you, if something doesn't resonate with you too, I feel like that's not, don't give up on it. Just maybe sometimes you have to find the right person or the right way of learning, or maybe it doesn't work for you right now. And in a few months it does. Like that happens all the time where you're like, hey, this thing didn't work for me a few months ago. I feel ready for it now. I want to try it. I feel like I'm more interested in it.
You know, that's one of the things that comes up over and over in the program is this perfectionistic idea that there is one right way to do it and I have to get it right. And mm-hmm. even people join the program and like, oh no, I'm not doing it right. And so that's like kind of the side benefit that I really love is really getting to ditch perfectionism and really getting a sense of how hard we are on ourselves, not just with food and weight and diet and all that kind of stuff, but so many things, the pressures we put on ourselves. And when we can start to see that outside of us and make choices where we get to be imperfect and messy and human, so many things get so much easier.
Before I send everybody to check you out online, maybe to follow along with you and to check out your program, I want to ask, has there been a book, podcast, or resource that has brought you incredible value? It does not have to be related to overeating, although it can be, but something that has brought you incredible value that you want to share with the audience?
That is such a great question. And that is the kind of question that always makes me go blank. We're going to end this interview and I'm going to be like, oh, I should have said this. I think given what we've been talking about, the resource, it's not a specific resource, but it's the idea of doing less instead of more. Mm-hmm. Slowing down, taking a breath, breathing, right? Doing less, just doing less instead of more.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, I love that so much. And it's funny because, you know, sometimes I get asked that question too. And I'm like, 2 o'clock in the morning, you wake up and you're like, ah, should have said that book or that podcast, that podcast. But Dr. Melissa McCurry, this has been such an incredible conversation. If people want to just check you out online, maybe they're interested in one of your programs, where can everybody go and find you?
Couple of places. You can check out the Too Much on Her Plate podcast, TOO, Too Much on Her Plate. My website is toomuchonherplate.com. And if you want to take the free Hidden Hungers quiz, which is a really great way to get zeroed in on the easiest place to start, you'll get some resources and an action step based on your results, then you can go to toomuchonherplate.com/quiz.
Perfect. I will make sure everything is linked in the show notes. Thank you so much for this conversation.
This has been great. Thank you for having me, Megan.
If you love this podcast episode, spread the love by sharing this with your friends and family, share it out on social media, and don't forget to give it a 5-star rating and review. From the bottom of my heart, I am so grateful that you are here. Until next time.